I'm going to go ahead and mention here at the beginning of class so that we don't forget that next week is our last week of this module, Transforming Problems. It flew by, but we will be beginning at 6:30. The last week of class, we always have the potential to start at 6:30 and have that be a longer day, kind of get some practice in, and we are definitely doing it next week at 6:30. And it's scheduled to last until 9, so plan on that, and maybe we'll transform all our problems a few minutes early, but we'll see. So the module, we'll talk about the last module after this one. So thank you.
Okay. Is anybody here for the first time tonight? So I just want to introduce myself, if so. And also, so my name is Stephanie, or Steep. It's my nickname here, so I answer to both. If this is your first time, we're kind of coming down to the last bits of this module. So just stick around and ask questions if you have any. We're going to be talking about a couple of the verses that we have been memorizing, and working with. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit today. But before we start and do our meditation, I thought there'd be more announcements. But I wanted to encourage people who, like, there's just a wealth of information in this room. I mean, there a lot of you know a lot, you've studied a lot, you've been places. Jack has been all around the world taking long retreats on this very topic. So there's a lot of people here that you can ask and get information from. And I want to encourage people who have been, you know, looking at coming to DB and coming to the center for a while to take a look at some of the requirements to become a DB teacher. In addition to going through all the modules, there are a certain number of mantras that you recite and collect and so on and so forth. You know, I never thought, oh, I want to be a DB teacher. Far from it. far from it. But I was already doing some mantras that Geshe-la had suggested that I do. So that kind of went on my little, you know, I was keeping track of things. I was doing these things. I was doing that. And then so these things kind of came together, just like the way I got my bachelor's degree. I had no idea I was going to get a bachelor's in social work. But by the end of the 4 years, it was like, oh, okay, I can get a degree in this. So I'm encouraging you all to keep track. If you are doing mantras anyway on the side, or there's something that you have an interest in doing, or please keep track, because you never know. Nobody sitting in DB in the beginning is really thinking down that way, but we need more people to be sitting up here, and it never hurts to keep track of the things that you are doing. And so the other thing I want to say is, you know, don't be shy about setting up a time to talk to Geshe-la. I keep his calendar, so just see me if you want to set up a time to talk to him. You can talk to him here after one of the teaching events, but he is such an incredible wealth of information. So it's incredibly rare that we have even found, you know, these kinds of teachings. And we have a center right in Raleigh. You know, how many people can say that? And we have a teacher who was trained his whole entire life in a Buddhist monastery in India. So, I mean, it's incredibly rare. So I'm just encouraging you, whatever level you're at, you don't have to have the world's most complicated question to sit down and talk with him about where you are at and what this practice means to you, and ask him for advice on how to implement it in your life. All right, so those are my two pitches. Now what we're going to do is take a few minutes to just settle down and be here right now. It always, for me, it's like Monday is a hard time to just like kind of like shake off everything that I just came in with. So that's why we're going to start with a little brief meditation. But even before we do that, well, maybe as we do that, I'm going to walk you through a little bit of motivation, and then about setting our motivation, because that's how we start practices. That's how we should start our day. And then kind of lead into just a brief focused meditation. We're just going to be counting our breaths. And then we will then say Refuge in Bodhicitta on page 35, someone's saying?
34.
So you could just leave that open for yourself now so that when we get to the place where we're really feeling it, then we will say it. Okay, so we'll say it in English together three times, and then we'll go into the four immeasurables. So you could just open that book and leave it ready for yourselves. And in the meantime, get into a comfortable meditative posture. If you're sitting in a chair, feet flat on the floor, facing forward. And the most important thing is to get your back straight. So whatever it takes to have your back straight, your arms away from your body. And just take several deep breaths. With each exhalation, try to let the stress, the talk, the thoughts of this day out. Just let them go. Let them slide off your back. Trying to stay alert yet relaxed. Just see it as like mud sliding off of a window that's now getting clean. The mud of Monday just slipping right off. And then to set our motivation for this practice, take a moment to see how this existence that we call samsara is really a beautiful prison. So what are the things that, because it's so beautiful, sometimes we need to remind ourselves of that first noble truth, that it's infused with this nature that is not freedom. This cyclic existence that we're caught in. And as you convince yourself and remind yourself of this prison-like existence, and you develop a strong wish to get out. Just like an inmate who never has to generate the wish to leave prison. Every moment of the day, they are very aware of where they are and their wish to get out. So like that, try to generate the wish to be liberated from this endless cyclic existence. What it would be like to be free of the suffering that you and others encounter here. To be completely liberated. To just go from happiness to happiness. And as you generate that wish, try to include a greater wish to then go back and liberate the others who are still in that prison. Just the way you would if your closest members of your family and friends were in the prison with you, and now you found the way out. You'd go back and show them how to do it as well. So it's with that determination then that we will put our minds to this study, that we will take a few minutes to meditate and focus our mind, develop that ability of focused meditation. With that motivation present. So then for the next few minutes, we'll just count our breaths and try to focus our mind. letting everything else relax, and feeling the nature, the true nature of our focused mind. And after a few minutes, I'll ring this little chime, and then together we'll say refuge prayer. So then kind of refreshing that motivation of being able to liberate yourself and others, that understanding that we need refuge from that prison. Then we'll say the refuge prayer 3 times. Okay. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So now this last sentence that we just read is kind of the heart of what we've been talking about with the eight worldly dharmas. It doesn't say, may I be free from friends. There's nothing wrong with friends. It's the attachment, right? And that's the tricky part when we're talking about the eight worldly dharmas. Because we... Thank you. I have a lot of pain in this one eye, so this helps me a little bit. So anybody remember what the eight worldly dharmas are, so I can just include it up here for the folks who might not have been here before? I've forgotten completely. So throw out some names.
Praise.
So these are, is this okay to use? I guess so. I have this one at work that I use, and then I realized it was permanent. It's really bad news. All right, so praise, and what's the opposite of praise then? Yeah, you can say criticism, but we'll just make this shorter because it fits better. All right, so praise and blame. What's another one? It's these opposite things, these dual things.
Pleasure and pain.
Okay. No, you can make up your own versions too, you know, like ice cream and onions, whatever, you know, something like that.
Fame.
I thought you just said pain again, yeah. Fame. And
non-fame.
Disgrace.
Reputation as well, right?
Yes. This is, you know, you'll see lots of different ways that these are kind of the bigger things. Praise, it's different than praise or blame, because praise or blame could be right here, somebody says something to me, criticizes me, or praises me. This is more about your reputation, which you might not hear directly from someone. It's kind of this bigger way that you're seen or disgraced. Okay? And then what else?
Wanting things.
Yeah, so gaining things, you know, getting some money and then losing some money. Whatever. It's gaining and losing. So, as you know, the distinction we've been really working on and going over in this is that it's not these things that are bad. That's kind of hard sometimes for us to get. It's not bad to have pleasure. If we didn't have that, then we wouldn't move towards good things. You know, when we talk about what we have in common with everybody else is that we all want happiness. There's nothing wrong with happiness. I mean, if we didn't have that desire for happiness, we wouldn't eventually move towards the ultimate true happiness and freedom from suffering. And it's nothing wrong with having friends. This doesn't say here, may all sentient beings be free from friends. it's the craving and the grasping. So we just have to kind of continually remind ourselves of that. And the other thing is that I think Don was talking about this in the first, Don Hendrick, when he was teaching the first class. It's also about helping our minds reduce the aversion to the negative side. Because we know that these are part of this world. We're not going to be able to escape these things. But if we can lower the aversion and do things with our mind to help us manage them. So for just take very practical things in your life. I was talking to a friend of mine who had to get a root canal, and having been through a horrendous root canal, I was like, oh, I felt so bad for her. And she said, oh, you know, I always just stop and think how amazing it is that we have this technology and this dentistry. You know, how amazing is that we have this resource? And I thought, that's really good. So then I had to get a root canal not long after that. So I was able to use that. It's what are you going to use to help your mind to reduce the aversion, the suffering, the grasping, the clinging. It's all of those things. That's what we're talking about. Not that it's easy, but it's our distorted state of mind that creates the grasping and the aversion. And we all have it. This is what we're working with. So noticing it is just really amazing. It's a miracle that we notice that this is what's going on in our mind. And just like when we're meditating and we notice that our mind has drifted away, hopefully you're not bashing yourself for having your mind moving away. Instead, it should be, wow, I noticed that. Every time you bring your mind back to the count of your breath, you've just strengthened that muscle. You've strengthened that ability to focus. It might take a few minutes, but hopefully you haven't followed your mind all over the place. You're like, oh, no, come back. Same thing when we notice our aversions and our clinging, and then we put something in our mind like, okay, it's amazing that we have dentistry. That is the same thing as bringing our mind back to the count. How amazing it is that we've noticed this tendency, and we're now trying to put in an antidote to help us with this. And we don't deny the unpleasantness. We don't just say, oh, no, it's fine. The things that are unpleasant are unpleasant. It's not that we're saying that they're not unpleasant and just denying it and covering it up, but we are trying to find ways so that our distorted state of mind doesn't stay that distorted. Okay, I want to get to some of, because we haven't spent a whole lot of time on the verses, and I don't know, how many of you who've been coming have seen now looked at the 8 verses of mind training? Because it's really important, and since that's what this class is primarily based on, I have it here. Oh yeah. But I wanted people to memorize at least the first 2 verses by tonight. So we're going to break up in pairs later to help you do that. But right now, I just want to talk about the second verse, and I'll read the second verse out loud to you all. We're going to talk about it a little bit, and then do this meditation on it. Okay, the first verse, and you're going to see lots of different translations. Just pick one. They all are pretty much meaning the same thing. It's just different people have translated the Tibetan in different ways, but the fundamental meaning is the same. I have memorized a different one, but I'm reading from this one, which is, I think, what you all have. So the first verse is, by thinking of all sentient beings as more precious than the wish-fulfilling jewel for accomplishing the highest aim, I will always hold them dear. So we've talked about that a little bit, how we're seeing others as the way that we reach enlightenment. They're greater than the wish-fulfilling gem. And so by bringing that to mind, we are cherishing others. Because all of this is about reducing our selfishness. Okay, we've talked before about trying to change that word. And just remembering that self-cherishing means our selfishness, our mind that's always focused on us. The second verse, whenever I'm in the company of others, which is a lot, right? I'll regard myself as the lowest among all, and from the depths of my heart, cherish others as supreme. So I just want to talk about this a little bit, because it's not always easy on our ears. It isn't the normal way that we go around thinking. And we judge others for lots of different reasons. But I want to start with this, like, why are we even having this verse? Why is this verse even in here? Whenever I'm in the company of others, I'll regard myself as the lowest among all. We're trying to develop, in this whole text is helping us to develop a sense of humility. This is actually a really secret practice. It's not something that you go around talking about. It's something that you do yourself. It's a spiritual practice. It's meant as mind training. It's we need to see ourselves in a healthy way as lower than others, with the thought that any qualities that we have are due to other people's guidance. Even with all the knowledge that we have, our own faults are still numerous. So this attitude of genuine humility is one that blocks pride from arising. Unreasonable pride. Pride in this way that we're going to be talking about is not divine pride. It's not confidence. Confidence is very different than pride. You need to develop confidence. You absolutely need to develop confidence in your practice, in your sense of self. But pride that gets in the way is this puffed up sense of self. And it creates this instant judgment of others. Now, you know, I just had somebody come in and do some work at my job to train people in implicit bias. It was a great training. And one of the things he talked a lot about is why the brain does that. You know, why does the brain kind of judge and have this implicit bias? It, to survive. This is the one of the ways that we know, like, is that sound good or bad? Is that the wind or is that a wolf? We need to figure that out. So our mind is kind of geared towards that judgment and that discerning. But we now have to also use our mind to not judge others. Because what happens when we have this kind of sense of pride is it creates all kinds of problems for ourselves. There are valid reasons to value and appreciate ourselves, no doubt. This verse is not about countering that. It's about countering this exaggerated attitude of pride that gets in the way. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche was saying something about how, you know, when something good happens to you, somebody praises you, you did a great job, and you kind of replay that in your mind, probably several times, probably a lot. He made this joke about, why don't you tape it and play it all the time for yourself to see how much you're actually listening to that. So say if I... So I do a lot of creative writing. Say I go and listen to this poet who won a prize. That poet may be thinking about all the compliments he or she got and the prize that they won and on and on and on. And I may really love that poem, but I'm not going to go home and think about all that praise. I'll probably think about that poem for 30 minutes at the most, and it's done. But that person who just got all this that praise and accolades, they're going to be thinking about that for quite a while. If they went around and talked about it as much as they thought about it, we would all think, oh my God, they're a little disturbed. But actually, that's what's going on in all of our heads. A lot of the time, we are repeating the negative and the positive all of the time. We're meditating on the negative things that have happened and also on these super positive things that have happened. And how do these things get in the way? So, for example, if somebody, I mean, this is just a simple example. I'm sure you have plenty of your own, but think about, you know, at your job, maybe somebody you would like to get this promotion, you would like to get this other position. Somebody else gets it instead of you. And if you're not able to counter some of the jealousy that's going on, even unconsciously, there's these other thoughts that start creeping in. Even if you keep your mouth shut entirely, you may be, again, unconsciously hoping that they mess up, talking a little bit extra about them in the lunchroom, hoping to hear some little bit of crap about this person. Then even say you get their position. You get that position because now something was found out about them and you're kind of rejoicing in their downfall. And now you're holding that position and now you're kind of worried. And now so you're saying certain things to keep your position. So whether you're on the low side or the high side, part of your mind is working in these ways that are just creating such negativity in your mind stream. So this kind of practice is meant to deflate that kind of pride that is getting in your way. It's not about, this is a really important point to make, that from a worldly point of view, it seems that to hold yourself lower than others would be an unhealthy attitude. But we're not talking here about depression or an inferiority complex. In fact, there's something called the pride of inferiority, which I thought was very interesting. The pride of inferiority wants to be important, but actually feels depressed. They feel lower in a different way, not in a healthy way, but feel lower in a way that they're wanting proof from others of their importance. Nothing's ever going to be enough. You know that feeling. Nothing's ever going to fit that hole enough. And so it's not this healthy way of seeing themselves as lower than others. So what we're trying to do is develop this, again, the spiritual practice of holding others as supreme. And the reason that this says whenever I'm in the company of others, because it's when we're around other people that this kind of thinking can go off the rails. So, and we've gone from the first one, which is of holding people as precious, to the second verse of when I'm around and in their company. So we've taken it to the next step, which is a little more tricky. And so what do we do? How do we do this then? There's a lot, and this is what we're going to move into in a meditation, is you can already think, I'm sure, of ways that you can try to maintain this attitude when you're in the company of others. What is it that you can do when somebody's really testing you to offset the other stuff that's going on in your mind? We can start to list some of them, you know, that these people have enabled you to develop your mind, so there's no need for pride. That without the company of others, without all the challenges that they're giving you, there's no way for us to stretch that ability. I mean, the list goes on and on. You're the one who has to kind of tailor it to that specific situation. One of the things I try to find, and this is part of the homework, is to find real-life examples of this. So I've been watching this Netflix movie called Last Chance You. Have anybody seen that? Gosh, I'm the only probably last chance you junkie here, but it's about these kids who have flunked out of college or something. They were football players, and they, something happened. They messed up. They got arrested. They did drugs, and so now they're back in this Division II school, and they're really struggling. But what I love about this being on Netflix is that people get a glimpse into the lives of people who they probably very easily judge. This kid who doesn't know, he's really struggling in school, can hardly spell, loves football, has some problems with drugs. And then you see a little bit more about their lives, especially in this one kid, I'll never forget him. He and his brothers were basically abandoned because his father was in prison and then his mother was arrested and nobody came home one day. And so the three of them just had to, I guess the oldest was 10, and so they lived on their own for about a month until Department of Social Services figured it out and put them in different homes. So, you know, it's just like this pullback into this larger view of their life that then you can start to develop some compassion. And usually we're just focused in tight on something, especially somebody we may not like. We're focused in right tight on that problem. And then we're the ones who have to try to pull back and get a bigger picture. So I want you to think about somebody, or even if you don't know the person, a kind of person or a specific person that's very challenging for you. I want you to really think about what it is. And if you don't have anybody, I'm sure we can come up with people for you. If there's somebody here who doesn't have anybody who's challenging for you, I want you to think about that kind of person and what it is that you could do right now to expand that view. Anybody need any help with somebody? Am I being clear on the directions? Okay. So just, you know, again, get into a meditative posture, and I want you to really think about that person from top to bottom. And somebody that you, it's easy for you to feel a bit better than. You know, that's only natural. There are people that it's easier for us to feel we're a little bit better than them, for whatever reason. And I want you to try different tools that you already know to see what helps reduce that pride, that aversion, that feeling that's not comfortable. What helps you reduce it a little bit? Does it help to pull back the focus and get a bigger picture of them? Does it help to see how this problem is actually benefiting you in some way? Does it help to see what you have in common with this person? Does it help to see what buttons they are pushing that are yours alone? And what would it feel like if that button just couldn't be pushed? That they've stayed the same, but your mind is different. What changes? Then what is it about this person that you can cherish? You to do is get into groups of 3, 4, 5 at the most, and just talk about that for a little bit, and then we're going to practice the recitation of these two verses. So get up and move and find a group of 3 or 4 other people, introduce yourselves, and just share some of what worked, what didn't work. We'll do this for about 10, 15 minutes, so.
Thank you. Yeah.
Take about 5 minutes to wrap up. Okay, and to try to wrap up your last thoughts. And you can stay in your groups, just turn around so we can all share a little bit. So any, you know, stay right there because I might be putting you back in the group. But any... So I'm going to probably put you back in that group, but I just want to hear any reports to the larger group or questions or thoughts about what came up there in dealing with people.
Everybody worked it all out.
Yeah, everybody's got it going. It's ice cream now, right?
Well, one thing that we talked about was that a lot of times dealing with folks who are really difficult, or we see them as difficult, is if suddenly we put our emphasis on what it is we're so attached to that this is bothering us so much, mm-hmm. it reframes the transactions that are going on. Because mm-hmm. now it's not focused on what they're doing, it's focused on what's going on here.
Right.
And it's kind of like... That kind of calms it down right there, because now I got work to do. I don't have time to get into it with you, you know.
Right. What is my hook? Because there's other people who are not hooked by this at all. Well, so maybe I need to work on my hook a little bit.
Well, they're at home asleep, and you're still looking at the ceiling saying that, you know.
Right.
But why is that? They're just like, thank you very much. Now let me work on what I'm so attached to.
And right. Because without that person, that person gives us this chance to see this. So that's why we can be grateful for it. You know, it's like without them, you know, they're acting as a mirror. I would also, though, advise, you know, to take it, know your limit. You know, take it in bite-sized chunks. So I once had this coworker that I just had no patience for. This is a while ago. And I, after she was gone, she got fired. She was just difficult for everybody. I really regretted that I hadn't taken more advantage of that opportunity and worked on my stuff. I mean, I wasn't bad to her, but I also didn't do much work on it. I was just like, ugh, like everybody else. So then, of course, I got another opportunity with somebody else. But I was much more mindful that time. Like, okay, this, now you can really look and try to pace myself. So I don't dive head first. Don't live with the person. I mean, just don't. Oh, let me just take it in bite-sized chunks so I have some success. Because I deal with people a lot of the time. You know, I mediate custody disputes, and so a lot of times the parents are trying to figure out a new way. What I always tell them is they have to have some success. They've just come out of some hellacious situation, and they're not going to have, bingo, instant co-parenting success unless they have taken in small stages. So what would a successful day look like in their lives? Get them to break it down to a successful exchange or telephone conversation or note before we look at the whole next 18 years. So that's the same thing. I'm like saying, like, break it down into what would be that one moment when you're encountering this person in your mind, in the hallway, on TV, wherever it is that this thing triggers you, what would a successful one look like for you? And think about that way before you're encountering that person. Practice it. It doesn't mean that you don't do anything. Just like, you know, Geshe-la will talk about this all the time. Like, it doesn't mean that the Tibetans don't want freedom, you know, that they're not trying to do things to free themselves from the Chinese government. There's still things that you have to do with a difficult person. You don't just say, okay, I'm nothing now. But you are figuring out what it is so that you're protecting your mind. That's what you're doing. Yeah.
Did you want to say? Could I? Yeah, I think I came across something that's positive at long last. I have a family member, and she thinks, well, she's going to set up a vacation for us, and we're going to love it without even asking us. And, I mean, it's not our idea of a vacation at all, a remote farmhouse somewhere 4 hours away, whatever, and we're all seniors, by the way. So what I did is just tell her nicely, well, we appreciate the offer, but I don't think so. But I've offered her help because she has health issues, physical, whatever, her head. Mm-hmm. She's had sinus problems and all. So I said, if you ever need us to bring you to a doctor or you want to come over, we'll go over there to help you out. We'd be happy to do so. So I felt very positive about that. I said, gosh, that's a nice thing to do.
Uh-huh. Oh,
to kind of counteract it. Because I don't know how else to get out of it because she's ticked.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and we can't control other people's reactions. But we can, you know, I think that's a great example of like, well, what can I do positive here? You know, and it doesn't mean that then we go and do something we don't want to do. You know, we have to try to figure out the right way. It's really, really tricky. So that's where it's this one step at a time. And then I was thinking while you all were talking about this whole thing of transforming stuff. I think when we are encountering other people, that's the most difficult. It's the most challenging. So we could even though practice it like we're going to in a minute on ourselves. So in Tonglen, the first thing you do when you do Tonglen is with yourself, which we're going to practice in a minute. So same thing when we're transforming something, when we're thinking about working with other people, we can also practice on ourselves. So like for the last several days I've had a stomach ache, and one of the things that helps me with stomach aches, I was telling Geshe-la of this and he just thought it was hysterical, but I said I read this book about you talk to your stomach ache, you know, you talk to your pain, and he told me he said this at Sunday. I said, oh my God. But anyway, so you kind of meditate and you talk to your pain as though it's something outside of you, right? Something separate. This blew my mind because at first I thought this is so silly. But then when I went into meditation and did it, it really rocked my world because it was profound. And what I did is I transformed the ache. I felt that the actual ache was something that I loved. So instead of just like, oh, please stop, which is what I wanted to do, which is what we want to do with people, which is please stop being a pain in the butt. I tried to feel that this pain was actually like a small child that I just loved. What if that actual pain was something you had so much compassion for, was so cute, you know, a cute little kitten or a kid, and you just wrapped that up with love? Well, so I did this in this meditation, and this has never happened to me, but that stomach pain eased. And it's just like somebody told me there was a movie where this person is in outer space, and there's some noise in their capsule. It's not a dangerous noise, but it's just like a ticking that they can't get away from because they're trapped in outer space. And so then they thought, okay, I have to fall in love with this sound. I have to fall in love with the sound. Because you know when there's a sound and you now build up an extra story about it, now it's on your nerves and it's like, why? And other people are just sleeping right through it, right? It's like that. It doesn't mean that the sound, you're trying to go with that kind of emptiness of the sound and then create a story that eases your mind. You cannot get away from this sound. What can you do to change the story that you have, if you first notice that you're adding a story to it? That's the hard part. And then what can you do to change the story so that you can live harmoniously with it? Now can you do that same thing with this person, with the people around you, in a way that's smart, that you don't go in too deep, too quick. Don't bite off too much because then you're going to, you know, it's going to backfire. Any other stories from the battlefields? Yeah.
Very helpful, thank mm-hmm. you. But I think that biting off just what mm-hmm. you can do is really important, because I think for me, my first response to that challenging person is anger, and then grief that it's not going to be what I had hoped, or. Mm-hmm. And I think right now where I'm at with it is just the thought of, I'm still mm-hmm. with it. I'm not one way or another, and I can go, okay, I wish you well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still a little bit of that, oh, mm-hmm. but softening it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the only thing I can do is just not say something right. in my head that's icky,
right.
you know, and definitely not out loud. Just right. be quiet. Yes. Just right. shut up, you know. That like, and but I think that sometimes that's enough.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's sometimes all I got.
Right.
You know.
Sometimes counting to 10 is a very profound practice. you know? And I think that there's this one quote I read somewhere, it's like, try to just be as still as a piece of wood. You know, don't move your mind in any direction. And so you have to know when to apply that. When does that is the best thing that you can do is just stay and keep your mind as still as a piece of wood. And when does it help to do some of the other things, like recognizing what we have in common with this person? What is the humanity of this person? How to, you know, it doesn't mean that it's not painful. It's not sad. You know, it doesn't mean that those feelings aren't also in the picture. But you're trying to figure out how to keep from going in this direction, which is only going to make things worse. You know, yeah.
His Holiness Dalai Lama's main translator was Jingpa, right? Jingpa. And I recall somewhere reading, maybe Fearless Heart or so, and he says, sometimes being right is not the right thing to do. To be.
Right, right. We just have to be right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Any other tips, thoughts, questions? Yeah.
I was sitting here and listening, and like there's some dots just connected in my head for something like dealing with difficult people. Like when I look at the people that I still have a lot of trouble with, a lot of it comes down to what they perceive my motivation to be for something. Whereas the people that I've proven, like, they trust me if I say, you know, you shouldn't do this, or I feel this way, or this is my opinion, they don't question my motivation behind saying that. They know that it's coming from a good place and it's genuine. And so, like, I'm starting to connect the dots, because the people that I haven't gotten there with, and especially like the family member thing, because they have their perception of me and how I do things, and like overcoming that, I think, is for me at least, is figuring out how to bridge that gap and build that trust, so that they understand when I say something, I'm not trying to undermine them or attack them. My motivation is very pure.
Yeah,
and that's one of the dots I'm connecting now in my head.
And so they see your motives in a way that is different from where you're coming from. And then does it get into like, how can I show them that my motives are, yeah. And do you think you'll be able to, or is it? I mean, sometimes we can't. Sometimes they're not going to see, right?
Yeah. I mean, you just have to keep trying. And yeah. I mean, it makes me feel better when other people around me, you know, I've earned that trust and won, I don't say won them over, but they know I've done the work, so that they know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard when, people don't necessarily see where we're coming from. I think that gets into that, well, I've erased it, but that reputation thing. You know, if they see you in a negative light, but that's not where you're coming from at all. You know. Yeah.
For me, the whenever I have a difficult time with anybody, this can be siblings or, you know, people in the street or...
Or siblings in the street.
Not here, because they live like far away, but...
Yeah.
Typically, it falls... I noticed, you know, the internal dialogue falls within one of those four categories.
Mm-hmm.
Always. You know, when I'm having... Yeah, the buttons that get pushed when I feel uncomfortable or angry or upset or disappointed or, you know...
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They fall within those eight.
Mm-hmm.
Either one of those.
Right.
And right now I'm at the stage where I can look at the internal dialogue regarding, you know, the button and just detach from the thought, like, oh, interesting, you know, I'm trying to gain this, or, you know, they're trying to take this away from me.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you?
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah, it's just a thought, you know, it's,
right.
You know, or they, you know, they're thinking this about me, and how can they think about that? And I'm like, well...
It's a story. I mean,
it's a story, you know. It's just a story that I have in my head. What about if I just not listen to the story, and then I'm able to, you know, just move on with my life, whatever I'm doing, you know.
Right.
Go with my kids or whatever.
It takes a lot of practice and
it does.
And finding ways to, you know, the stories are running pretty fast and thick in our heads. It's hard to take a break from them sometimes, which is why meditation is so helpful.
Yeah, I have to meditate more because I do get, when I get caught, it's just constant.
Right. Oh. Yeah. So even finding, you know, just a couple minutes in the car when you've parked somewhere, somewhere to just, you know, take several deep breaths and try to, you know, take a little step back from some of it. Because sometimes we think, oh, I have to have 30 minutes to sit and meditate. But being able to find even just 5 minutes in the car before you go in or do something can be huge, you know, really huge. Or, you know, sitting in the car and saying a couple of malas of a mantra just to try to move from that story to something more positive. And so this verse, when it talks about from the depths of my heart, cherish others as supreme, the commentary on that is that, you know, it's often easy for us to kind of at least intellectually get it and come up with ideas and practice it without it actually being a heartfelt cherishing of others. And so that's why that part of the verse is there, is that, and Geshe-la talks about this a lot, like, can you take what we're talking about and move it to your heart? It's not going to be easy, but you'll know when that's made that switch. And so then you'll sometimes dismiss your progress as like, see, I don't really have any more patience. No, you just made this huge switch. Now this person is no longer really a challenge for you. That one is. Mm-hmm. But you were able to move that and shift that, and that now is in your heart. Even if it's there for a moment, you know, that's huge. So I think I've told you before, like when Geshe-la first came here, he gave this whole weekend teaching on patience. And in, you know, in these kinds of texts, there's like these 10 reasons for keeping your patience, 10 reasons for bad things about losing your patience. And so we went through all those, and it was really like I couldn't wait for the chance to practice this. Like he was saying, you've got to catch it right before it arises and apply these thoughts, you know, about looking at the advantages of keeping your patience, the disadvantage of losing your patience. You can't do that once you've lost your patience. So I was so excited, like I can't wait to lose my patience, I just can't wait. So that's the kind of feeling we have to have, because when we are able to catch it right there and apply the antidotes, we have just built huge amounts of merit, but also strengthen that muscle. We'll be able then to do it in the next situation, But you don't start at the Super Bowl. You know, you start with something. I'm using all these football analogies. I'm not really a football freak, but you start with something you know you're going to have some success with. So maybe not with the person, away from the person. Then like, okay, that person, I could try just when I'm passing that person in the hallway to have better thoughts about that person. Sometimes I'm amazed at just what I'm thinking about somebody like in the grocery store or something. I'm like, okay, you can change this. You know, I might not be able to do all these other things, but I can change what I'm thinking about this person. These are strangers. I can definitely start there. Start with strangers. Start with somebody on TV. And then trying to begin to apply wisdom. So we all know that, like, again, trying to reduce our pride. Think about people who you wouldn't normally hold up as like superior to yourself and how much they have taught you. So, I mean, I think Jack and I were talking about this before, but, you know, so think of like a child who says something that's brilliant, beautiful, poetic thing a five-year-old has said that stuck with you. That is a teaching in a way. Or something somebody has said who seems like they're from just some other place that you would never put yourself, you know. And what an amazing insight that's given you. Kind of like what I was telling about this kid on this TV show. Wow, what he's lived through. What he has lived through that most of us would never be able to live through some of that. He's come all this way, still trying, not giving up on people. Still trying. That these things, if we can remember, that reduces our pride. That it begins to reduce our pride, that we can hold them in such esteem. So then if we can try to do that with these other people. So just keep practicing like that. Who are the people you wouldn't normally think of like this? You wouldn't normally elevate. And try to elevate them, even from a distance. And then you start doing that with in most difficult situations. Okay. Rats. Okay. So I'm going to just implore you to memorize these, at least these first two verses. Okay, because next week you're going to be singing them with me. So you can do it. You can do it. I'm not going to make you do this with each other tonight, but at least two. So I have a friend in New Orleans. Geshla came there to teach. That's where I grew up. And I brought him back there before Katrina. And I was also helping this little Dharma group there. And after Katrina hit, a lot of them contacted me and said it was so helpful to be able to have some of this with them during the whole struggle with Katrina, especially the meditations we'd done on impermanence and patience. So why am I telling you that? I have no idea. Why am I telling you about Geshe-la coming? Oh, so that one of these friends of mine, what she did is she wrote down these eight verses on index cards, and every day she had a different one in her car. She used to teach high school in this really rough, my high school in New Orleans, and there's this one kid in particular that it was really aggravating her. And she just, you know, as she drove, she was just repeating this verse in her head over and over before she came into class. And when she saw that student get up to come up towards her, she said that in her mind, and she said it was so profound how much it changed her interaction with this kid that she, you know, she got goosebumps. So it's like that. It's her mind that changed. She related a little bit differently to that child, and it shifted their relationship a bit, even for that minute. Even if it's just for a minute, that's like an earthquake in your consciousness. So, all right, we're going to do a little bit of Tonglen, because we'll do a little bit more next week. Next week is our last week. We're going to meet at 6:30 so we can do a little bit more fun and games, singing and all that stuff next week.
Which translations are you using? Where is that from?
Is this the same one that y'all have? No? All right. I don't know where I got. This one is from Geshe Langri Tangpa. But there's...
Should we post one online that is the same one?
Yeah, I thought there was one that they have access to with the student material.
So, right. In the student material, there's a commentary on eight verses. It's the eight verses of thought transformation by His Holiness, and it's the first article in the Transforming Problems DB readings that are online.
Yeah,
but it's kind of all spaced out. So, yeah, you'd have to put
it's
on...
not that one.
No, I just wrote that up there in case somebody, yeah, it's
they're all similar.
It's similar.
So we'll go with the one that's in our PDF.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise.
Sorry to confuse.
Oh, it's. I think. Okay.
Yeah. Use what if you don't have access to material, ask Aaron after the class how to get access. Okay, but it's there. The commentary and the text. It's a great text to memorize. It's relatively easy compared to some things. It's all in English. You're memorizing it in English. That's a huge advantage. yeah. All right. So, does anybody not know what Tonglen is? So it's, you know, it's this practice of giving and taking and giving, and we're going to practice it just on ourselves. It's a meditation. It's all visual meditation. Very old practice. And again, these are things that you do privately. They're your own spiritual practice. You can do this walking down your hallway at work. You can do this anywhere, but it's good to practice on a cushion in the beginning. So we're going to start with ourselves. Next week we'll do it with other people, because you can always starting with yourself is the best way. So you're going to visualize when we get into the meditation, you're going to visualize a version of yourself sitting in front of yourself, in whatever way that's easiest for you. But I want you, before we go into this, to think of something that you would like to dissolve of yourself, some difficult thinking, attribute, whatever it is that you feel kind of gets in your way. Again, something that gets in your way, whatever it is. You know, it could be, you know, irritability. You know, you can make it something kind of current. Something that's been getting in your way in general. You know, my impatience is such a problem. You know, I'd really like to dissolve some of my impatience. Or, you know, my jealousy is really a problem. I'd like to dissolve some of that. My laziness is a problem. Whatever it is, pick one thing. And then I'm going to have you think of that problem as you visualize yourself in front of yourself. And in the meditation, then, you're going to be taking some of that out of your imagined self in the form of thick black smoke. So that problem is going to come out, and you're going to visualize it and inhale that. And as you inhale it, it's going to dissolve the problem inside of you. Okay, whenever we're inhaling the problems, or next week we're going to do it of others, it's not that you take it on. It's not that you become that. It's that that power then dissolves the blocks and locks and karmic obstacles that you carry as a human being. So you're going to inhale that smoke. It's going to bust through the problems that you have, and then you're going to exhale this pure white energized light, crystal clear light, to the being of you in front of you. That makes sense? Any questions? And you know, you might go ahead.
Can you say that part about it's not like you become it, it doesn't
You
or whatever.
Right. You are not taking on that problem. You're not becoming it. You're inhaling it so that that force that you're inhaling is busting through all the blocks that you have of selfishness, of whatever thing that you've taken on. That smoke now is just bursting through all of that. Okay? It's not like, okay, now I'm even more selfish. It's like you're not taking on the selfishness. You're bringing in the smoke. That thing that you're trying to get rid of is coming out in the form of this smoke. You're inhaling it, and it's just busting through you, and now it's just clear white energy that you've got inside your body that you're exhaling to yourself. Okay? So just remember, you're breathing in that force to break through something. You're destroying these blocks inside of you. You're not becoming worse. You're taking it in to bust through it. Okay? So let me see if there's anything else. And you might find a way to alter it in your mind. Like I know some people say it helps for them to see the smoke coming out like in 3 or 4 inhalations, and then they inhale it and burst through. Whatever it is that works best in your mind. But you understand the point now. So get into a comfortable position with your back as straight as possible. And again, visualize yourself, whatever form that's easiest, you know, exactly as you are, or some shadow form, whatever it is, yourself is sitting there, and now you've identified this block, this problem area that you want to purge, want to clean up with great compassion for yourself, with total love and the motivation to dissolve this problem so that you can be happier and those around you can be happier, so that you can all be liberated from this prison. So then slowly see that coming out of you, the you in front of you, is thick black smoke that you inhale, and when you inhale, it bursts through all the blocks and locks, obstacles inside of you, transforming you into clear crystal energy through every cell, every pore, and then you're exhaling that pure, incredible crystal energy to the you in front of you. And then again, from that arises more smoke comes out. So that I'm going to be quiet so you can work with this for a minute or for several minutes. So try that this week on your own and see if there's adjustments that make it easier. Like I said, some people practice with like three breaths. Slowly the smoke is coming towards them. It takes more time to visualize it, and then exhaling three breaths. And next week we'll work with more challenging things. It reminded me of something I saw this week. You've heard of phantom limb syndrome, right? Where somebody has an amputated, say, hand, and they have a lot of pain in this phantom, the hand that they don't have anymore. They experience excruciating pain. And something about the nerve endings, so on and so forth. Well, one of the therapies that they've found that's really helpful, it just seemed so incredible to me. I see so many parallels with what we're doing. It's mirror therapy, where they create this box where, so say I don't have a hand, but I have this hand, and I put this hand and my other limb in this box, and this projects this hand over here. So now I see that I have two hands, and I move this hand, and at the same time I'm visualizing moving my phantom hand, because I still feel a phantom hand there. And that eases the pain, that I've created this trick in my, for me to be able to see and feel this other hand moving with this hand. And this reduces the pain that the person is feeling incredibly. And so what I think about Tonglen and our ways of visualizing ourselves reacting to difficult people in the best positive way that we can is the same kind of thing. That we have this, not this phantom self, this Buddha self that we're trying to move towards. And the more that we can create these mirror therapies of seeing our higher self actually functioning and walking around in the world as we, this hand, walk around in the world at the same time, we're moving closer to that. Even if we don't see it right away, we are. So that's this week's homework, is to practice meditating on the ways that you would like to act in challenging situations, you know, the bite-sized challenging situations, and to try this Tonglen, because next week we're going to build on it. So it will really help if you have done this with your own things. All right, so we were going to say the Shanti Davis prayer, which is on page 246. I love these people who have memorized the pages. It bodes well for memorizing everything else, if you can memorize. Okay, so, yeah. Let me get my glasses out. Who wants to lead it?
May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the sight-frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.